two, the report and possible discussion on pension advisor report by RBC Institutional Consulting Group.
Well, no, I think this is, we got actuary. May I skip one?
Thank you. I beg your pardon. Correction.
That's no problem.
Report and possible discussion on annual actuarial evaluation report by Gallagher Benefit Services.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, I'd like to introduce Doug Anderson, who's with Gallagher Benefit Services. This would actually be the first report that Doug will perform as our actuary. They were also recently selected this last year. And you've already hit upon some of the actuarial questions that he's going to probably discuss. You received his report in your thing, and here's the presentation I'll just introduce. Oh, okay. Yeah, you heard where my questions are headed, so go ahead.
Hopefully be able to address all of them.
Okay.
Good morning. I just have about 10 slides here to run through, which is a broad overview of the plan. Mainly the participants briefly, the assets, the liabilities, and the contributions and where they're heading. Just a quick note about Gallagher Benefit Services. When we were hired a year ago, it was as Stanton Group was the company that I was with, and they have since been acquired by Gallagher. Hasn't changed a thing about the work that we've done in the past year. And when we were hired, we thought this is going to go very simply. It's a closed plan. Those are tend to be easier to administer. And I just come down here every year and tell you you have zero contributions because things are going well. It's been anything but that, a challenge on many ends, including cleaning up some of the participant data that we've gone through. And now with the market changing things, it adds some challenges to the contributions. But just looking at the participant data, not a lot of change overall in the plan. Total participants went from 373 down to 370. Participants changed classifications, so they moved from active status to either retired or to vested term, and vested terms move on to retirees. And it's only when participants either terminate before becoming vested or become deceased that they exit the plan. So overall, not a lot of plan changes, nothing significant, nothing different than expected. Page 8 of the valuation report shows how the participants change status. Page 9 shows a distribution of the participants. And one thing that's kind of noteworthy, you can see the average age of the participants is approaching age 49. Almost exactly half of the participants are age 50 or older. We're going to approach a lot of retirements in the next decade. So, the following page is 5 years of history, 6 years of history on actual participants. One page prior to this on the presentation. And then where we expect the number of participants, how we expect that to change over time based on the assumptions that are in the plan for termination and mortality. So you can see how the plan is expected to decline over the next few decades. The following page shows the reconciliation of assets for 2 years. You can see the pretty big difference from year to year. We're looking at the first column is March 2007 through February 2008, and the second column is March 2008 through February 2009. I noticed your auditors found an extra dollar for you, $16,449,502 versus our number, not what we consider a material difference. But the loss for that fiscal year was 22.6%, and I heard the question raised about how does that stack up to what we've seen. And since most of the plans that we look at are usually calendar year plans, we were seeing probably on average about a 30% loss for calendar year 2008. Now you're measured March 1 to March 1, and March 1st of 2009 is approaching the low point of the market. I think I heard the date mentioned earlier around March 8th or March 9th or so. So this is really being measured at almost the worst possible time. So potentially it can only go up from here. But the loss that was created...
Me too. For an actuary, that's really...
I tend to be an optimist.
Because we have to worry, right?
Yes. So while there's a loss of $5.0 million, from our perspective, it's actually a loss of $6.7 million because there is an assumed return of 7.5%. We were assuming during that period of time that you would earn $1.7 million, and by losing $5.0 million, it's a drop of $6.7 million from what's expected. And then I did see from the investment report that the balance now is all the way up to $17.7 million. So it's up about $1.2 million from where it was back in March. Our process for doing evaluation includes getting all the participant data, applying the provisions of the plan about when benefits will be paid, and making a series of assumptions which for each and every participant, we predict how much benefit will be paid and the probability of that benefit being paid at every possible age all the way out to age 120. That's where the mortality tables go. Again, we're optimists. I think there's a chance people may survive to that point. But we do that for every participant. And then rather than trying to match the assets and project the assets out to every possible payment, instead, we discount all those expected payments back to today's date. That's how we determine a present value of benefits. And we compare that to the assets to get the plan's funding status. And these are some of the assumptions that we use. The key one is the investment return, 7.5%, which is, despite this past year, is actually relatively conservative. Yeah, most public sector plans range from 7.5% to 8.5%. Slightly more than half use 8%. The mortality table is one of the more common and more recent ones that we use. We have retirement rates and termination rates. These were fairly accurate over the past year. As we do this work for a few more years, we'll kind of monitor those and see if anything needs to be recommended. But the asset value and the cost method were two things that we changed this year. I'll tackle the cost method one first. The prior actuary was using a cost method that was still based on salaries for active employees and kind of classifying liabilities in that way. Since this plan has been closed and frozen, I did not feel that's an appropriate method to use anymore. By switching methods, it really didn't have a very significant impact on the contribution this year. The contribution was impacted significantly, but is entirely by the asset values. The other change was to go to an asset smoothing method. This impacts the timing of your contribution requirements. Doesn't impact the ultimate cost of the plan, doesn't change the benefits for people down the future. It only affects the timing, and it's a very common practice with public sector plans to help smooth the contribution requirements from year to year, to try to take out some of that volatility. Primarily it's used for budgeting purposes. And we'll talk about the numbers of that. It's on the next slide. It's where we put these pieces together. The first step is that present value of future benefits, which we estimate to be close to $23.4 million. Just on the slide, we've kind of noted that there are no future accruals for this plan. The plan's been frozen. So there is the present value of benefits includes every benefit that's been earned to date, and since nothing will be earned in the future, that's accounted for everything that's expected to get paid. Then we compare the asset value to that amount, and to the extent the assets don't cover the liability, you have an unfunded liability, which, based on the actuarial value of assets, which is $19.7 million, the unfunded liability is $3.6 million. Now, the actuarial value of assets It's a five-year smoothing, and all it means is it takes that first year of losses, that $6.7 million of losses, and it only recognizes 20% of those losses in the first year. And then the next year you'll recognize another 20%, and the next year another 20%, until 5 years from now you've fully recognized all the losses. But there's a government accounting standards limit how high that actuarial value can be. They only allow you to defer so much. And the actuarial value can only be 20% higher than the market value. So that smoothing method would have given an even higher actuarial value, but that accounting standard limits that actuarial value to be no more than 20% higher than the market value.
What is the theory behind that? Why is that?
The cord or the capping?
Okay.
Well, you know, it's the first time I've seen it applied in 20 years. And usually the smoothing will take that actuarial value and just smooth out all those fluctuations in market. And I think they just don't want the actuarial value to get too out of line with what the market really is. And this is, I think, a good example of it, is that, and I don't have the number right off the top here, but that actuarial value, if that cap weren't applied, it might be $21 million. And then you're starting to get where there's a gap between the actual assets of 16.4 and this actuarial value that's deferring all these losses is up around 21, and it becomes really rather deceptive.
If the market went down further or stayed down, then that's deferring having to look at the unfunded more so. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
So as a result, that's what they're trying to accomplish, is make you face it.
Yes. Yeah. They want to allow for the opportunity to smooth out your contributions, which is the main purpose. Is just for budgeting purposes. They want cities and states, counties to be able to have contributions that don't fluctuate a lot from year to year. It just becomes burdensome on budgeting. So that's the main goal for this method. It's not intended to allow you to just push off making contributions indefinitely.
Now, my question, particularly since this is going to be smoothed over 5 years, let's say the market turns around completely and next year is back where it was a couple of years ago, okay? And because of the way the smoothing works, is that going to still indicate contributions? Because where it was a year ago, we made zero contributions.
Yeah, you would have to, again, you'd be deferring the gains as well.
But what we're basically saying is we're going to make contributions for the next 5 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and as well, and I'll talk about contributions coming up a little bit, as well as there's a potential they may get larger than where they're at.
If we increased our assumed rate of return to 8, have you modeled that here?
I haven't here, but what it would do is it would change that present value of benefits. It would decrease it.
So the unfunded portion would need to be higher.
And then it would decrease the unfunded as well, the current measurement of the unfunded. But then it makes it harder to make that assumption each year, and you're increasing the chance that you may have losses in the future. So, for example, since this is measured at 7.5, if we were to value that present value of benefits at 8%, it may reduce that present value of benefits by probably about 7 or 8% from that number. So it may take it down to
22.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
I learned long ago to always bring my calculator with things like this.
Yeah.
Maybe around 21.5 million or so. So just by changing that assumption, you could change that present value by nearly $2 million lower, which would reduce your unfunded, cut that in half. That's your current measurement. So it could make things look a bit better now. But then prospectively, the likelihood of earning 8% isn't going to be as good as earning 7.5%. And it'd be harder to keep up with that liability.
So it'd be, so there's an argument to lower it to 7 then.
It's all a matter of perspective on how you look at it. So you could either measure your liability and cost high with the likelihood it's going to get better and you'll have gains in the future, or you can estimate it low and you have a more likelihood of having losses in the future.
What typically determines what actuarial interest assumption you use? Is that a board decision? Is it how do you come to that number?
Generally a board decision. We make a recommendation, and it's based on the investment allocation. So we'll look to look at what the board decides as the investment allocation. We'll look at those asset classes, make long-term assumptions about those asset classes, weight them in correlation to the allocation, recommend that to the board, and then follow what the board's direction is.
So our allocation of 60-40, round numbers, would predicate what interest rate?
8%. Yeah, and I just say that based on that. That's what we see out all throughout the country is typical asset allocation is 60-40, typical assumption is 8%. And since that's a long-term assumption, even looking at this past year, we don't see a lot of movement in those assumptions because they're 30, 40-year assumptions, and people, at least actuaries, don't quickly respond that it's a bad year and change it.
I guess theoretically you can change it every year to fix your problems, so to speak. Not squat and decision, but you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and and while actuaries will follow board direction, there are limits on, sure, on what we consider reasonable too.
Yeah, but just listening to what Leroy said, the other side of the story is if I'm sitting here looking at employees saying we're going to take care of you, it's better for us to be conservative to make absolutely sure we can take care of them. Is that not correct too? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All
right, let's move on.
Okay. This last note on this page, and it covers the next page as well, is that we take that unfunded liability and we schedule that to be paid over a period of time. And that amortization period was reset this year to 30 years, the longest that's allowed under the accounting standards, to give a payment of $285,000 a year.
The 30-year annual was reset by the accounting standards?
Well, it's as part of our recommendation to change the cost method, it requires that the unfunded be amortized over a period of time. And then we recommended that 30-year period.
So we're going to have to adopt that? Is that what you're telling us?
It's a recommendation. And anything shorter, the shorter the period, the larger the contribution. And I've been approached by a lot of, almost every client I have with the request of how can we spread this cost out over the longest reasonable period. And so it's 30 years is becoming, it's going to be the most common.
Do you know where our practice has been? Because I don't.
Yeah, under the prior method, what the actuary would do would be to take this difference in costs between the liability and the assets, and they'd spread it over the future working lifetime of the active participants. But I don't believe that's appropriate after you close a plan. Your active participants don't really represent the lifespan of the plan anymore. And so that was the reason for recommending a change to this method, that this method is, in addition to me making more sense in how it allocates costs between retirees and actives, it is the most common used method out there.
Okay,
And this is just a comparison, actually of two things. One is the difference between contribution requirement from last year to this year, what a difference a year can make. And then it's just classified differently because of the change in the cost method. And then on the following page, we have the history of contributions until the plan was frozen and closed in 2008. At that time, the assets equaled the liabilities. 2009, the liabilities, this is for the year end 2009. Now for the year end 2010. The number is slightly different than the previous page because we adjust for 1 year of interest. Previous page was the contribution requirement at the beginning of the year. This page, the different number. So this too shows what must be the amount at the beginning of the year, the 286,000.
Your printed material has an increased amount.
Then the printed material would be an end of year number.
Yeah, 307.
Yeah. Yes. Now, I'm curious, when I'm looking at those previous contributions, and I'm kind of like Peter, I don't have the perspective of a long time on this, were those all contributions by the business? This is not employee contributions?
No, this is all employer, yes, sir. They're okay. All made by the Bradford.
So we've been used to making employer contributions
when
it was an active thing.
Yes.
And then when it became inactive, we went basically to zero.
That's right.
Okay.
And the spike you see where it paid the big jump from 261 to 563 and up to there was really a result of the downturn in the market in the 2001, 2002, the recognition of that and being able to have to really increase. And I have to go back, I don't remember exactly, but the actuarial methods were probably a little bit different back there with the prior actuary. And so that's what ramped that up. And then 2007, as the market gained, we made pretty good contributions. Then the market gained in the 5, 6, 7 time period. And when we froze the plan, we actually discovered where our plan's really fully funded for all practical purposes at this particular point in time. And that's why there's no required contribution for all practical purposes in 2008-09, as the market sort of held and met our actuarial required thing. So that, of course, this has been sort of an unprecedented change here in this last year. So.
Lump sum distributions are not allowed, are they? Lump sum distributions?
No, that's right. This is just a pure defined benefit plan, and it's only annuities are all that are paid out of it. Yes, sir.
I'm a little confused over the 30-year amortization of the unfunded portion when you have if it's closed, then you have all the math right there for the people that are in this plan, correct? Mm-hmm. So why would we do 30 years?
Well, you would have a choice to spread that cost over any period you would like, up to 30 years. And the reason for 30 years, on this slide, that this contribution for the year ending 2010, I'll address two things. If you didn't use the asset smoothing, that contribution would be $585,000.
Okay. On the 30-year?
On the 30-year.
Okay.
Now, if you went down to, say, a 10-year, just off the top of my head, that might double it again. Okay. Probably.
But don't we have a defined number of people in this plan? Because it's closed, and you have their actuarial death rate charts on those people? Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't you do it to that?
Oh,
I actually, Peter.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. Well, but that's the reality.
Well, actually, if I'm sitting here getting it right, if we were going to spread it over 1 year and look at that type of thing, we'd have to make like what was it, $3.6 million or whatever contribution right now. But what the reason for the smoothing is the assumption of the growth in the future, and so. Rather than having to make that kind of contribution right now, we're saying it's going to work itself out over a period of time. And if it's not working itself out, then we'll actually be making bigger contributions in the future.
I understand that, John. The question is the smoothing based upon what that certain denominator is going to be, 30 years, 10 years. And my question is that is typically limited or allowed up to 30 years because you have all this dynamic aspect to a plan. This plan has no dynamic aspect. Am I right? So why not do the math on the reality? We should do that. If we don't decide to use it, that's fine. If we decide no, but there are this is an instance where there's no dynamic aspect to this question of amortization. We're putting down the maximum, but we haven't defined. We have the answer in math. You see my point? And as a committee member, I think we ought to do that calculation. Because it is who we are.
Right here.
But that's a 30-year.
No, the 3.6 million is today's math.
We have no amortization.
It's actually larger because that's a different. I think you're looking at the difference between the liability and the actuarial value. Because if we looked at the difference between the present value.
That's doing the numbers that he's talking about, yeah. Though, the actuarial value and discounting it and everything. That's what we're coming to is the 3.6 million.
I would probably suggest that it might be 6.9 million if we're actually looking at the difference between the market value and the liability. So that's one way of looking at it, is that the full liability is 23.4 million. The actual market value is 16.4 million. You have a gap of 6.9 million. One funding choice is you fund that all today. That's the 1 year. It's a 1 year amortization. We're showing really the other extreme to get to that 286 beginning of year number, 307,000 end of year number. That's deferring some asset losses and spreading it over 30 years. And you're right.
I very much understand that.
Yeah, and we could provide and show any measurement in between.
See, we've got employees that'll be in a plan in 2029, which is roughly 30 years.
Yes, and this plan, if it were to play out to its conclusion, the last payment to the last participant might not be for another 80.
If it goes to be 120.
80 years.
Yeah. Okay, so then if I understand, because I want to understand it, the $6 million would be a 1 year amortization of it, which wouldn't be, I wouldn't agree with that. That would be realistic, practical. But we're going from that all the way to the other end, to the maximum amount, to fund as little as possible, basically. So let's say that. Okay.
And I tell you what, I'm sitting here trying to make sure I understand the point you're making, though, is yes, we're going all the way to the other end, but the other end is still sound decision.
Yes. As
if we make 7.5% over that period.
Right. Yeah, and that's a key here, is that this contribution, if you earn 7.5% of the market value, that contribution is still going to go up next year.
Absolutely.
Because you have to recognize another 20% of those losses.
Plus, if we don't make the 7.5, which we probably won't, we're going to have to increase it more.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's going to start going up if we don't see some dramatic increase in our returns.
Yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. The next slide shows, make sure this matches up with the one that's sent. This is a comparison of the liabilities, which are the blue bars. And I'll talk about this first, is that the liability, because it's been discounted at 7.5%, that means it grows at 7.5%. And that's relentless. It marches on at 7.5% every year. But it also decreases when you make the benefit payments. And you have a significant amount of benefit payments. And so really what that's indicating is that the liabilities or the benefit payments coming out are close to 7.5% of the earnings. That's why that liability number isn't expected to change much over the next few years.
Stay flat.
Right. And then the the bottom line, starting with the market value of assets, starting at $16.4 million, a fairly similar story is that if you earn 7.5%, but take off the benefit payments, it's really close to a zero net on those amounts. So it stays relatively flat. Now that actuarial value, that's that hypothetical value. That's not real. It's temporary to help out take out contributions. That's going to drop down, and eventually, if all assumptions are met, meaning if the market value earns 7.5, that actuarial value is going to meet that market value in the future. And we could play this out over a long period of time. Eventually, the liabilities and the market value meet at the end of that 30-year amortization period, or they would meet at the end of any amortization period that you choose. And then finally, last page is we show the expected benefit payments over the next 5 years or so. Currently, in this past year, I think they were closer to $1.4 million. With expected retirements, you start to see this increase pretty significantly. And that concludes the presentation. If there are any other questions?
Any questions or discussion?
I'd just like to say thank you for helping me understand. Appreciate
okay,
that.
Sure.
But the only question, Madam Chair, that I'm debating here is the fact that he's talking about certain assumptions stuff. I'm thinking we have to adopt that. I mean, he's made the recommendation to us saying, here's what I'm bringing. Do we not have to agree to that?
I understand what you're saying, Director Breeden. I'm not sure that...
hadn't that been previously adopted?
No.
We used the 7.5%?
So the 7.5% is in the investment policy. These are some more discreet, if you will, assumptions that from an actuarial standpoint. The 7.5%, yes, absolutely, you've already adopted that,
right.
And that's in the policy. But as far as the smoothing techniques,
the 30-year amortization, et cetera, that has not been adopted, and the fact that he presented it as a recommendation, I think that we have to adopt it, either that or tell him, no, we disagree and do something different.
Well, that goes to the board, doesn't it?
Well, one of the things,
to the board through us.
This is not set. We're not, this is for discussion only. We're really not even, we can't legally take action. At this particular thing, because we didn't. Okay. But we can bring that back and bring it back and do that next time. So.
Well, I have one other question. When, because we're going to do this process periodically, is that annually?
Yes.
So, I mean, each year there's going to be a new set of math, another set of mathematics on the facts. And
what we
assumptions have to be reviewed, and I think that'll be ratified every year. This has just been a really difficult
it's sort of an anomaly.
It's an anomaly here, but I think it requires more of our attention because of that, because we want to make sure our people get their retirement funded properly. That's my concern.
Right.
We're not, you know, pushing a liability away when we should be addressing it.
I think probably would make sense rather than just coming once a year, is maybe 6 months, is coming back and discussing the assumptions to use in the next actuarial cycle,
and
you all taking action if that's appropriate to.
We cannot ignore the fact that we've had a 3.08% return in the last 5 years. That's been a 5-year return. We can't ignore that. Okay, so we've either got to start getting to the 10 or 12% return, or we've got to start funding more or changing assumptions. But we're going to dig a bigger hole. Is that a fair statement? I mean, we got a 3% 5-year return historical. So we've got to turn that around. Now you've recalculated, so we got a new mark here, but on the 7.5. But
has this assumed contribution been put in the budget?
Yes, sir.
It's part of the 2010 budget.
Yes, sir. And it's assumed to be. It will be made, assuming the board approves the budget.
Okay.
Later today, it will be made on September 1st, 2009, right at the beginning of the budget.
Okay, I'm just asking, what if I think we should fund more?
you could do, you certainly can recommend to the board.
Why would you disagree with me then? Let me just ask that question. If I wanted to suggest we fund more, what would you disagree about that?
I wouldn't necessarily disagree. I'd just say we would need to come out of our reserves, of our reserves. We certainly could do that to some extent. And John may be able to talk to this from an investment standpoint. There's some theory that may make sense. If you're aggressive about thinking the market's going to recover, there's a logic of putting more money. That's what you're in effect doing, is you're putting, not only you're shoring up the plan, but you're putting more money into the market, so to speak, at this time, any more money that you put into it. That's the other flip side of it from an investment standpoint. Does that make sense? Some might say, if they think there's going to be a big rally for the next few years, we ought to fund all of it, because then you're going to get the benefit of that rally, so to speak, with more money. But that's, I'm not advocating that, I'm just saying.
But in effect, that was sort of the effect you had in 02, 03, 04, 05. You put a lot of money in.
Mm-hmm. And we got the benefit of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one approach. There's two to make sure it's solvent. The plan's got a number of years, as Doug had pointed out. It's going to still be paying benefits for 70 or 80 years, probably, as it pays the final benefits. It'll be a lot smaller at that point. But
the board then should consider that.
Yes.
Well, make sure our reserves are very adequate in light of that. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Because we're going to fund it one way or another.
Yes, that's right. It's either going to be funded or it's going to be funded out of growth in the market, out of market earnings.
Well, see, and that was my question to kind of all the folks, is the fact that if we're optimistic that the market's going to go back to 7.5+, and what we're saying is we're funding at this level because the market's going to make it up in the future and we don't have a problem. If we're not optimistic to that, then we need to be funding now because we're going to have a bigger funding liability later.
That's right. The liability will compound, as Doug was saying, if you don't hit those targets.
Just out of curiosity, Peter, what do you recommend? If you're saying fund more, how much more?
I think we ought to split the amortization in half, or maybe take it back down to 15 or 10. I just think that we made a policy decision, and it's ignoring that potential liability. And does anybody think we're going to make 7.5 in the short run? Because you think we're going to make 7.5 between now and the next 12 months? Okay, so that gets us back to where we'll only be funding another $300,000 to $400,000 next year, right?
If you're in 7.5% in the March 1 to March 1 period, that contribution of $300,000 or so is still going to go up because you have to recognize 20% of last year's losses too.
It's a smoothing effect.
Yeah.
We're still paying, so we're pushing. Okay.
So you're saying it will still go up. Give us an idea how much. Because your chart ago did not go to projected after 2010.
Probably close to up to 400,000.
Okay.
Probably close to 100,000 a year for 5 years.
Increase. Yeah, and I guess I'm just minded that let's fund that instead of piling it on top of another year. That was my only.
But now that's not taking into consideration any gains that you have. Is that correct? Because you amortize any gain.
More than 7.5%.
Any gain you have this year, you amortize that over the next 20% over the next 5 years,
so
also.
That would be the contribution pattern if the market value assumption is met.
Stays,
so if
yeah,
you're
stays,
in 7.5,
half, yeah.
If you're in 7.5, then you'll have 4 more years of recognizing last year's losses.
Yeah.
And you'll step up 300,000, 400,000, 500,000.
Well, nothing would preclude us next year of even changing the assumption in next year's audit, too, if the committee so decided, to a 15-year amortization or something, which would step up the contribution more. You'd have the impact that we were already talking about, plus an additional impact, but that would be sort of a catch-up. I mean, it's just, it's really however much you want to.
I'm just on the theory, guys. This is new to me. I'm just looking for, maybe that's why I'm talking to you. If you guys think I'm missing something, say so. But I just take the more conservative approach to it. Let's fund our plan.
We've got these people that are going to be expected. And on the other hand, if we all look at each other and say, well, that money's in the reserves anyway, so we can always do that in any given year if we have to. You know, perhaps we won't. Maybe we'll make 25% next year and do a lot of catch-up.
What's the benefit of an employee dies? In other words, let's say they go into, they die before retirement, they die after retirement. What is their benefit schedule?
There is, Doug might be able to explain, there is a death benefit. If they die before retirement altogether, there's a death benefit they will, their estate will receive.
Gotcha. Okay.
If, of course, they died during retirement, then depending on the selection of whichever plan they select, their spouse may continue to get, okay, of course, benefit or whatever. That's right.
Is
there
any cost of living benefit for the retirees? I mean, is it frozen on their retirement? Is there a payout?
He's talking about CPI adjustments.
There's not.
That's
right. That's right. And I understand what you're saying. Earlier, you said something, asked if anybody think we're going to make a 7.5% return next year. I'm not really worried about year to year. What I'm more concerned about is what you said. Over 5 years, we've made 3%. I think we need to address that too, more than about anything.
And our next item, we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the strategy and investment strategy.
Okay, what a good discussion, and maybe the staff can give us some feedback at our next meeting on this issue.
We can come back and be great. I can agree with Doug. We can come back and do a couple of hypothetical of what the difference would be, and certainly the committee can.
We could obviously amend budget if we felt that we had money.
We can, if the committee decides that they want to fund more, we take it to the board, and the board approves we can amend the budget accordingly and do so in the future at any point.
Okay,
now, Doug, this is your first meeting, isn't it?
I sat in the audience 6 months ago or so.
Well, welcome.
First one, Ronnie. Thank you. We've enjoyed working with the project and the staff.
Okay, so since we only have one item left, maybe we